the music that you, I think, heard me play on piano in, I guess, it, almost 2 years ago now, October of 2022.
At Pageant,
yeah. That was a bunch of pieces like this and other ones, which is something that I've been doing recently, where it's basically like I have hundreds of hours of record, like cell phone recordings, basically, of me just like fucking about on the piano over the past 10, 15 years or something.
Uh-huh.
And towards the beginning of COVID, I would just start to like listen through all of them and like listen for like little droplets that felt like something to hang on to. And I would just like pull those out and listen to these little like 10 to 15 second snippets like over and over and over and over again. And then transcribe them and then write them out and then learn, like sort of relearn them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a, like I feel like I've heard about dancers doing this thing where like they just film themselves like improvising and then they watch the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like build pieces out of what they see themselves do, kind of without thinking about it. So the source material for all of these, and this book is mostly full of them, like just these little snippets.
Mm-hmm.
And I only ever like gave them like catalog numbers, basically, because they're not like pieces unto themselves.
And those are those are some of the things that you played.
These are some of the things that I've played, yeah. And so they turn into these kind of like. I mean, it's interesting. They're pedagogical pieces for me because I'm hearing them. I'm sort of like rustling around for them.
Uh-huh.
And then studying these tiny little fragments really, really closely in order to produce this. But then it's this really interesting process of like teaching myself this stuff in my hands, even though this comes from my hands already. Like this is the source material of this is like probably like an hour long improvisation or whatever.
This
whole thing.
Oh, okay.
And this is like one little extract from that.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm learning it, it doesn't feel like it's something that's already in my hands, even though like all of the movements are things that I know that I do. So it's like it's a weird, uncanny like.
Wait, so can you just in terms of this, can you explain the pageant? The difference between what you're doing now and what you performed at Pageant, which you said before, like sight reading in some ways?
Yeah, okay, so the thing that at Pageant was mostly these pieces.
Okay.
And then since then, last year I did a couple of 2-3 shows in various places where I was, instead of performing these, I would basically like, I would like sight read something like this, or I would just have this in front of the keyboard and like do something like you were describing your mom doing, of just like not doing it in time, but just doing it slowly enough for me to know I'm playing all the notes correctly.
Right.
So like really just like
looking in time.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And like, because I'm not like a very accomplished piano player, I'm just like interested in it. It takes a long time for me to get through one of these, whereas like, you know, somebody who's like actually good at piano would be able to just read it down.
Mm-hmm.
But to just sit there and like play that, and then have to think about the next chord, and then have to kind of like gather your thoughts and then play the next one, and then gather your thoughts again and play the next one.
But so your own writing, so this is the Nietzsche, this but your the own Nietzsche. Own writing for this one that's like a collection of droplets, you said, right?
Right, right.
You would do the same, I mean, a pageant sounded like you memorized them.
Exactly.
You didn't have to look at it, you played it,
right.
So it was in time.
Yeah.
But like you're saying, these, you also have been now, like your own compositions, you've also been looking at them while playing.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Can we just hear one, Rick?
Yeah, yeah.
Just so I understand, kind of. Is gonna be too loud for that?
I think it's great. Let me see if there's a. This is a, well, we can sort of learn our way through this problem.
You mean the problem of the.
The problem of the like sight reading versus memorizing. Let me try to sight Well, yeah, let me just read through this at the pace that I can, knowing that I don't have these memorized anymore, even though I used to.
Yeah. Even though they were like maybe ones that you played.
Yeah, and like all of this, the source material from all of this is stuff that I did unconsciously or whatever, and then putting it back together as something that I can like consciously remember how to do. But then that's mediated through having it written out. So because I haven't played this in like a year and a half, I'm going to be reading it again, but then it'll like maybe come back to me a little bit, where it would be like, and then probably if I had it memorized, it would be a little bit like, and the way I probably played it initially is like,
right.
Yeah.
I like the weird buzzing this morning.
It's really good.
You know, yeah. It's like really just watching you do that. One thing that I have a question about is like, what? Is there a word for that kind of time?
Right.
It's confusing before that you said like us playing it in time, or in like real time or whatever. But real time is actually just compositional time, and it's not real time.
Yeah.
Like, real time is actually like what you were doing, which is like, you know, tilting your head and like, is it this way?
Yeah.
Or, like, and like trying to read as much as a part of it.
Yeah. Though I guess real time comes. If you're already in the fictional world of the music, like the real metric time of the music,
right.
Which is of course the fake time.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
But then, and then the other thing I was noticing is like when you, which is maybe part of it, the changes in, I don't know if it's tempo or what,
mm-hmm.
but the changes of, you know, like
mm-hmm.
of going, I can't do it. Like when you go on a scale or up a few notes or
uh-huh.
down a few notes, that is like has a sort of seamlessness to it.
Right.
And then there's a chord, and it's like
right.
as if synchronicity is the thing that always delays.
Right.
It's interesting.
It's like if somebody is reciting a paragraph or something like that, like reciting the Pledge of Allegiance or something that they.
Yeah.
Are supposed to have memorized, and there's a line that they know really well, they're going to nail it. And then when
yeah.
they get to something they don't know, they're like,
Yeah.
And to the Republic for which it stands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the time, I've heard people describe this kind of time as, appropriately, the time of learning. Like,
ooh, beautiful.
This type of rhythm, like, to play it mm-hmm. in this type of rhythm, like I just played it, is like, it's partially in time, but then it stops when
mm-hmm.
something out of time is happening. Thank you.
guava juice?
Thank you.
Cheers.
So what were we talking about?
You were going to play another little...
Mm.
Yeah.
What, one of these?
Yeah, I'd love to hear one more.
Let me play...
Memorized or not. Mm. I mean, I really like this difference between... Was it in time?
Yeah, in time and time of learning.
Because yeah. it is literally like the crossing over of those two things of like the timekeeping of a fiction, which
mm-hmm.
is the fiction of the music,
right,
or song, and the time of learning, which is like the outside time.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the outside time, but...
I mean, I imagine like... I don't know. I've been trying to think about this in my class recently, too, because I've been... I was teaching The Silence of the Sirens, the Kafka
mm-hmm.
story.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually like teach music stuff, and this semester I'm teaching some more like literature stuff and novels and those little Kafka parables. And I'm like, you know, I print it out and give it to the class, and then the class all has it, and we're all reading it. Like one person will read a paragraph out loud, and the next person will read a paragraph. And it's like, it's one thing to just be like, okay, we're gonna have a kind of like experience of this entire thing. We're gonna read it all the way through and like have the sound of it in our heads
mm-hmm.
versus reading it. To be like, okay, stop there.
Right.
What's going on here?
Right.
Like, can we talk about this? Like,
yeah.
the reading time of, like, dissection versus, like, cinematic experience
right.
or something like that.
Does that happen in music? I guess it's, like, the trip. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like I just watched from Maestro. Like, yeah. Okay, stop.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, it's, like, it's a classic thing when you're in the time of learning, when you're in that time. But, like,
yeah.
I think that... music tends to be really like
over framed
and like when it's happening it's supposed to be like okay it's happening like
right.
we're really in cinema time
right.
but I feel like the most like can you imagine anything more beautiful than like listening to an orchestra play something and then stopping in the middle and being like wait let's do this part again
right
and like stopping and doing it again and like you might not even be able to tell the difference but like that would be so wonderful.
Keep your voice so beautiful.
Like breaks the contract in a
yeah.
way. Nobody would
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
Let's look at this one, which I have memorized, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to play it correctly. So maybe that'll be another question.
How does this work? This is left hand.
This is left hand on the bottom stave. This is right hand.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's the same. It's like two. We call it two staves.
Two staves. Yeah, yeah. And the rhythm. I mean, part of the, you know, kind of joke in this weird process is that like these being transcriptions of quote unquote improvisations means that the time is really inexact because it comes out of like. Feeling time first,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't like really belong in this very metrical division of time. So all of these rhythms are an approximation.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to give this to somebody who had never heard the original thing, they would interpret it differently. But because I like have a sense of how it sounded in my head, I'm kind of like fudging the numbers a little bit.
Can I sit next to you while you play?
Yeah, please.
Your space?
Please.
Maybe
actually, come. You want to come on this side?
Sure.
Because this one is low. So this is like. Let me see if I can play it. Thank you.
beautiful. I guess going back to like thinking about it in relationship to teaching, or I mean, what do we? I said children's songs. Did you ever say children's songs?
Yeah, in that show, I described it as children's music. Yeah.
And do you think of that like in terms of a children's song being something that's like what?
Right. I mean, that's kind of a question, I feel like, because there's children's, I feel like there's children's music in the sense that it's music that's made by adults for children to listen to.
Yeah.
But there's also music made by children, and there's also music made to help children learn music.
Right.
So like pedagogical songs or something like that are a slightly different category than like an adult children's music songwriter who's playing music for children to enjoy or something like that.
But why would something be children's music? I mean, not to challenge it. I believe it and I see it and I hear it, but I'm wondering for you what you hear or read or write and why, you know, be it any of those categories.
Right.
Or let's say not pedagogical, because we'd like, you know, let's, even if it wasn't pedagogical, what would make it children's?
Yeah, right, right. I mean, I think that the, for these, I kind of think of them as like, maybe they're more children's in the sense of pedagogical, just because of this process of like me listening to it, transcribing, which is a very like studious, like studently type of thing to do. And like is a practice that I associate with like being a kid and learning music, is like transcribing very simple music, and then to like learn these little, I mean there's something sort of etude like about these like small little droplets, right? Like this is never going to develop and become like a composition in its own right. There's something like, it's like a little thing that belongs to itself, like a little like tchotchke or something. And I think that the kind of like smallness of them, they're like these little like photographic miniatures or something like that, and that and the pedagogical aspect makes me think of children's music in a way. There's also music, I mean this is part of the joke about the pageant show, there's music just about children, and so one of the pieces that I played then was this I don't have it memorized and I don't remember if I'll be able to play it, but it's something to the effect of like,
that's very different.
It's like not for children to play, but it's about baby Jesus. So it's like,
but you can hear it. It's funny.
Yeah, right.
But you can hear that it's like it's in the world of like being about a story.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It has that kind of like descriptive, programmatic element to it.
But that's maybe what's so striking to me about these little, you call it droplets, these, is that, like, can you just play the, maybe just this,
kind
of teeny part of it? I'll stop you. Even the simple, there's two things it makes me think of. It's like, one, the simple switching of an octave, that I think, as you have experience teaching too, that just even switching an octave is like kind of about influence, right? And if I think about it compositionally also, that like the song is teaching itself, or it's teaching you. You have a memory of something that just happened, and it's influencing the next thing, obviously. It also makes me, you know, I mean,
sort of like, what is a song that, that teaches, is literally teaching, you know,
right.
how to hear it.
Right.
Rather than a song that's very stately and knows what it is.
Right.
And is just doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it, it's just a quick aside, it like makes me think of like how I remember, I think in kind of early in college and a little bit before, I, you know, was really drawn to dance, and I love dancing, but it would like, you know, Merce Cunningham was really important to me,
mm-hmm.
Trisha Brown, like that troop of people, but also more contemporary stuff like Miguel Gutierrez, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And what was striking to me, or how I thought about watching dance, was that the first, you know, say it's a 20-minute piece, the first like 3 minutes or so tell you the vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
and then it shows you what that vocabulary can be,
mm-hmm.
or you know, maybe it shows you these elements, and then those elements, you know, get switched around, whatever else. But you have to understand the vocabulary
first, right,
and
right.
be able to recognize it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like what these little droplets sort of seem to
right.
do too.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, there's somebody the other day just described to me the first part of a book is describing the rules of your thought problem.
Mm.
And then you just elaborate inside of the thought problem
mm-hmm.
after that. But like, obviously, not all books necessarily think they're working like that. But I like the idea of like, the beginning is just like establishing what's on the table. Like
yeah.
what you can play with, and then you elaborate on that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting with these, because I feel like, I mean, I think that a lot of, we could think of a lot of music that attempts to sort of teach the listener how to hear it as it goes.
Mm.
And these, I think that the way that it seems to work, or it, the way it works for me experientially, is just through the like, kind of like, brute fact of repetition, the fact
mm-hmm.
that like these will just repeat until you get bored of playing it,
mm.
or like they repeat as long as it's interesting to repeat, but there's like one little thing that happens in here that always like, that's probably what caught my ear it, in the first instance when I heard it is this, so it's going to happen in,
you mean when you were listening to your,
when I was listening to the recording of it, yeah, and that's what made me want to kind of like look into it further, but I think it's going to happen on this with my right thumb on this note, but there's an interesting thing that's like, but it's just like, there's one little thing, just like, it's as if it's an accident. Like.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I heard that and I was like, oh, it sounds like it's like, it's like a little like fart or something that like every time you repeat it you're like, oh, what is this little thing doing
mm-hmm.
here, and like, does that melody go anywhere, because there's a whole principle in like so much of this type of music that like that's a melody, even though it will be played in different fingers and everything. But then there's just this little like.
I see. Beautiful. It's nice that, I mean, it's kind of, it's an intrusion to the,
yeah.
another intrusion to the fiction.
Right. Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, it's like a photograph where like, you know, everybody's looking so beautiful and perfect, and like one person has their eyes closed because they're blinking
oh,
or something,
beautiful.
And the more you look at it, you're like, oh, it's a little bit wrong. But
right,
also,
or
like
it's more. This was a moment in time.
Yeah, exactly. Which is exactly what these are supposed to be in my mind.
Wonderful. Can you bring us to do something else?
Yeah.
Or where I'm going to go wherever.
Why don't we look at, speaking of,
or maybe I can get involved.
Yeah. Speaking of pedagogical pieces, these, I don't know this music that well actually, but this is a series, I think there's 6 volumes, but they sort of like develop all piano pieces, and they the premise is that they get progressively harder, And I've only like played through the first couple, and then by the time you're on the sixth book, it's really way above my pay grade.
Yeah.
But they start like, I mean, they are
like
kind
Suzuki.
Of, yeah, yeah, method. Sort of. They like, I mean, it's interesting because now you can hear like a concert pianist play through the entire book, and it's like 2 hours long or however long it is. But like, it starts with just like, I mean, these are actually like pedagogical pieces for children, basically. But then it gets into his kind of like weird modal atone.
Bartok,
yeah. But we could, you want to play this one together?
If you, yeah, sure.
This will be good. Okay, a lot of the premises of these I've found, some of the more difficult ones in here do this. It's like the hand is just in one place, and it never has to move. And so, like, basically you're just looking at, like, a map for your fingers. Like, and it takes no, like, you don't have to be jumping around or doing anything, but, like, you can just have your hand in one place. So I think for this one, you can, yeah, use your right hand.
Right hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
In
so
that
I'm
place
the
where you
the
were.
Top part.
So you're going to read the top part. I'm going to read the bottom part. So you... Yeah, have your thumb here.
Okay.
And then each finger on
not
one.
Here.
You can do it up there too, same thing. And I'll do it down here.
And each finger on another.
On another white key, yeah.
Ah.
And so we can do it like this, where the. You know, you played cello, so you know a little bit about this stuff.
Yeah, I know a little bit about this, but I can't remember if you taught. Like, I don't remember if that's an A or a C.
Right, right.
I think
right.
That's a B.
So this first one for you is a C.
Which is which?
Your thumb. Yeah. So, and you know, in these rhythms.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm going back down.
Right.
Okay. So.
Let's do it slower than that.
Yeah.
So we'll do like, one, two, three, four. One, two, three.
Oopsie.
Right. Because this will be like one, two. We'll play on one and three here, and then this will be on one again.
Okay.
So
yeah, because it's four. Four.
Yeah.
Okay.
One, two, three, four. One.
I'm sorry. Okay, again.
So we'll count to four. We'll start.
it's going to be harder than
this. This is great. One, two, three, four. 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 One.
I'm moving my thumb.
Yeah, I could tell.
<I'm> sorry.
So you fool yourself into thinking that you have to, and then you end up getting into trouble. So if you just trust the process that you actually only need to. You can keep your hand completely as is.
Is this something that would be composed for, two hands, but two different hands? I mean,
this would probably be for one person playing with both hands. You want to do this one again?
Yeah, I think that's probably nice.
Try to do it without moving your hand this time.
Okay.
So you'll use each finger, but this one only once, because that's your peak. And this one once and at
that's
the
good, because my pinky is not... Oh, where is the... Oh, yeah, pinkies once.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here, let's accentuate this. So this will be one, two, off, four,
right.
One.
Okay.
Okay. From here. One, two, three, four. Let's do it and we'll repeat it. We'll take that as a repeat.
Why do I move my thumb?
Yeah, it's weird.
Maybe because I like don't. I'm not playing with this finger.
Yeah, you don't trust that finger or something.
Yeah, maybe I just think I have four fingers. Okay.
One, two, three. That was great.
I did it.
Okay. Let's do another bar talk. So let's do this one. You are going to use your right hand, and your thumb should be on A. Yeah, and everything else just like we did last time.
Am I on the white keys?
Yeah.
Which one are we doing?
This one.
Okay.
But here
we start.
So five is your pinky. So you start. We're going to start at the top of our hand.
Something with my right hand and your left hand doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe before we go to like even the idea of piano piece for four hands, mm-hmm. maybe we could do one with two where my part's different than yours.
Yeah, totally.
Probably, right?
Yeah, let's do that. We can do that in the bar talk, actually.
Because, I mean, what's beautiful of this image sitting here is that I do remember when I would finish my cello lesson, I would go and sit while my sister was finishing her piano lesson down, like, around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And there were always two students that would, like, at the end of the class, I guess, there would be two students that would do work together, and it would be, like, mm-hmm. side by side. And I always thought it was beautiful because even if they were playing the same piece on two different octaves, I guess,
mm-hmm.
or two different spaces of the piano, they, it was like when somebody fell off key,
mm-hmm.
or fell off in some ways,
mm-hmm.
the other person, like we were doing, the other person
right.
is there kind of to secure it
right.
going forward.
Right, totally. Yeah, when I was in school, there would be like saxophone workshops in some of the auditoriums, which I wasn't in because I'm not a saxophone player. But the saxophone, and the different kinds of saxophones, some of them transpose to here, so that like if this note is written, this is the sound that comes out, but
yeah,
others of them, or it's really like octave below, but it's like that. And then other saxophones, if this same note is written, this is the sound that comes out. And so when you hear saxophonists, a bunch of saxophonists of different kinds in a room practicing like a scale, it sounds like. Jazz melodies and stuff, but all in perfect fourths like this. Like, it's completely like, it's like a completely different musical language to think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, why don't we try doing this? Actually, let's do this one.
Okay.
You.
So, this is two hands, but my right hand and your left?
Yes, and the two hands are doing different things. I don't know if. This might be kind of hard, but we can try it. So your thumb will be here.
Okay.
And it's like our five key thing that we were just doing, except for your pointer finger is there. Everything else is white keys. Sounds really strange, right?
Yeah.
So you won't have to move your hand at all, but we can play it like this. Basically, this is he like gives them the sort of themes at the as titles, right? So the title of this one is Imitation and Inversion. So basically, we're going to be playing, at least at the beginning, we're going to be playing the same thing, but offset by two beats. So you start from here after you hear me go.
Oh, wait.
Your cue.
Oh, wait. You're here?
I'm here.
Oh, you're there.
You're there. So after I play my first two notes, that's how you know you enter. Want to try it?
Yeah, maybe let me just look at it first.
Yeah.
Even though, that's the weird thing, actually, speaking about time, is that, like, I have to stay in time for you.
Yeah, right.
Which
whereas
is a whole
if you were playing
solo.
This by yourself, you would be playing it in learning time. But because we're both playing it, we have to kind of, like, either agree to do it like this or disagree.
So learning time kind of disappears in some way.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we can try to play it with learning time.
Yeah. We could try to play it. This happens, too, where two people are playing together and, like, one person is in learning time and the other person is, like, in teaching time.
Yeah.
Like, they can come back and forth. We were just doing that in the earlier way we played it,
too. Well, let's try it. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, great. So I'll start with the two notes, and that's when you start in your thing.
Okay.
Intuitively.
I know.
The time.
Yeah, I didn't
really
know what was going on.
Okay, I'm gonna start from here again.
Okay. Wait, am I off? No, it's fine, right?
No, you're good.
Okay.
Let's do it from the top again.
Sweet. But you know what also maybe would be great to do? I think my favorite thing that we've done so far is actually your pieces and just the sound of them. And so maybe we can just share a couple more. Does the word etude, I know the word etude like means in some way study, but are they like, they're kind of used as practice?
Yeah.
Even though we listen to them narratively?
Right. I think that a lot of them are written in such a way as to like practice in a kind of technical sense. So there's like an etude for the left hand where the left hand is really busy and is doing all this stuff, and to learn that etude is to like, it's to learn a piece of music which is sort of hovering in its own right, but it's also to actually get some technical practice for a specific left-handed thing. And so I think that our kind of like listening to etudes as pieces of music in their own right maybe is a little bit like, or maybe they were, the composers who were doing that are sort of playing with the like function, because it's like it's merely a functional piece of music, but also that in itself can be very musical or something.
But you wouldn't? Would you call these etudes?
I would. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I framed them, or that's how I experience them as like learning, because the process of transcription is such a beautiful like practice of learning too, learning to listen really closely and to transcribe that into writing, and then the process of like putting that into my hands, something that like spilled out of my hands on accident, but then to sort of reintegrate it on purpose.
Beautiful.
It's like you generate your own, it's like keeping a dream journal. It's like you generate your own content kind of constantly, and to like put out little like droplets to catch the, put out little jars to catch the droplets as they come, or like to catch the condensation.
It's also like, you know, almost looking for reason and instinct, which is like kind of always what teaching is doing.
Right. There's another like sort of way to at least in my own process of looking through these, there's a kind of interesting other side of it where, like, if I listen through stuff that's like from 2008 and then stuff that's from
your own,
yeah, of my own, and then 2017 and then 2021 or something, I can hear, just in like what my hands are doing, I can hear the music, like the other music that I was learning on piano at the time, just from like instinctual like
right.
movings around. So this one that we were checking out earlier of the that's very, to me, that's very Satie kind of like manual language, and it's because I was playing it when I was like learning piano and doing a bunch of this stuff, so this is all I had in my hands. And then there were like other times where, you know, I was learning a bunch of Brahms, and so there's like some very like Brahmsian like hand things that I'm doing as I'm just like muttering to myself on the piano, but I can sort of like read the archive in that way.
Beautiful.
Do
you want to pick, or you want me to pick?
I'll pick one that, some of these are arrangements for a friend of mine, some of his music. But I have one that's more, this one is a little bit less like active in terms of, this is more kind of like chordal.
Let's see.
So we can do this one.
Changes. Is there one that you feel would, I mean, I saw you looking, then looking down at your fingers, but is there another one that has more kind of learning time?
Mm.
Time of learning.
Yeah. there's one, there's a lot of these, like, I feel like when I was, if I would do a lot of practicing, that's just very, like, ooh. Like, moving the hands a lot, the rhythm ends up becoming this really weird thing, which then I kind of have to decipher again as I go, but mm-hmm. we could do something like, we could try this one. Just land on it, we had to like
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So beautiful.
Which is an artifact totally of it just being like me looking at the thing and like, okay, well
here and then
like it actually is felt out like that and to like record that trace on the thing.
Jimin, is there another moment in another work that has that? A composition that sounds like correction or searching in some ways. Because it kind of does that, like, again, learning time.
Right. this might... We think.
I love that piece.
Thank you. I've like never, I don't know if I've ever like performed that one.
It's incredible. It's just, does it make sense that Appalachian Spring?
Definitely, definitely. Especially being played in Searching Time.
Yeah, true.
This one maybe isn't so much correction, but is sort of like, to me, sounds like, so the, I'll just play the beginning of
this one here on the right?
Yeah. It's very, like, it's, there's only one, like, there's almost, like, no surprises that can happen. It's like, this, the left hand is basically only doing this in various patterns, and the right hand sort of has two different characters. One of the characters is just this, which keeps coming in, and then the other character is a little melody that goes in between these notes. If you just have that as your rule, you have, in the right hand, you have the alternation of this and that, a melody with these notes, and then in the left hand, only these notes, then you can just, like, be inside of that. Like, it's like a child-proof, like, play place or something. It's like, that's one where I just like the different elements I gave to. I wrote this out for a chamber ensemble, and it's like these two. This was a cello and a bass clarinet playing basically just this motif, and then a viola would only be doing this. And then the flute would be going. Because they feel like such different, like,
worlds.
Units. Yeah, totally. It's great.
So special.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I feel like this is the world I want to stay in.
Yeah.